We're here with Stanley Lombardo. Welcome back to the University of Houston.
It's wonderful to be back.
And we're going to talk about the translation of EPIC, though you've translated other things. EPIC is, as you know, such a huge commitment. You more than anyone know this. And since you have done this wonderful trajectory from Homer to Virgil to Dante and more, in fact, I was just wondering if you would care to give us a little bit of your sense of your personal history in this trajectory, because it's a very particular time when you began. You've worked as a classical scholar as well as translator, and years from now, looking back, people will wonder exactly what it was when you started and your endpoint. So I was just wondering if you would care to relate your own odyssey.
Well, I would say it began when I was really in high school. Not that I think we studied some Latin in high school, but mostly I just relied on my altar boy Latin for that. But I became interested in poetry, in English poetry. And I think I've used the phrase before that you may have seen, it really became the stream of my life. That is, I really wanted to be a poet. And so I did two things. First, I practiced all of the fixed forms. I made up drills for myself, write a perfectly correct sonnet in 5 minutes, you know, that sort of thing. I trained. And I also listened to recordings of poetry. I listened to Richard Burton reading Coleridge's Rime of the Ancient Mariner. I listened to Dylan Thomas read everything that he had recorded. I listened to a lot of Shakespeare. Albert Finney was my favorite. I listened to recordings of The Wasteland, and I listened to all of these things so extensively that eventually I had them all memorized. And I didn't think that much of it then. Well, I thought a little of it because I found that I could win bets. Give me a line from The Wasteland, I'll give you the next one, bet you a dollar. You know? But looking back on it, looking back on that process of deep immersion in verse, in poetry, most of it formal, although not, you know, Eliot's Wasteland, I think that shaped me in some way. As a translator. When I finally came to study Greek and Latin seriously in college, this was at Loyola University in New Orleans, first Latin and then Greek, all of my self-generated poetry training came back to me, and I experienced everything that we read as something that I really needed to work with. So besides practicing all the forms, one other thing that I did was I imitated. So I would write what I thought was fairly close imitation of Shakespeare, of Milton, of Keats, of Tennyson, of Gerard Manley Hopkins, of Eliot, of Pound. I did a lot of that. So when I read Homer for the first time, especially, although it started a year earlier with Latin, all of this came together for me. Mm. So it's a kind of imitation. And how do you imitate? Well, you listen very, very closely, and you memorize, and you absorb. So that's what I started to do with, first with Homer, actually. Learning enough Greek to read, to begin to read Homer, was a life changer for me. And we used this Jesuit textbook, Homeric Greek. And so you learned all of the grammar and vocabulary necessary to start reading the Odyssey as soon as possible. I had to do that or either sociology, so it was an easy choice. And so I started to, I learned how to read metrically, dactylic hexameter, Greek. And then later, of course, with Virgil's Aeneid, the same sort of thing. And I would memorize passages and try to make them come alive the way Richard Burton made the Rime of the Ancient Mariner mm-hmm. come alive. So that's how it all got started for me. Really, it was an extension of my experience, you know, learning how to write poetry. And, of course, you learn right away that Homer's poetry was oral composition. It existed in performance. Even after there was a written text, it continued to exist primarily in performance. And to a lesser extent, that's even true of Virgil's Aeneid. This stuff was, whatever way it was composed to be performed, read out loud. So that's how it all started. It's that sort of natural flow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm impressed by what sounds like a youthful self-discipline, and it often seems to be true of translators, whether they go on to be professional classicists or not, right? There's a self-discipline needed to really access the Homeric text in all its philological detail. I'm just interested to know then that your love of poetry then pushed you to develop the self-discipline for the philology part of it, I gather, is what we're saying.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, I have no way of accounting for that except I simply loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Pound says in the Cantos, what thou lovest well is thy true heritage. Mm-hmm. Thou lovest well shall not be reft from thee. And that's what kept me going. I absolutely loved it.
And that was pretty much a straight line all the way through the decades of your work, or did you have episodes where you came back to yourself?
How do you mean came back to myself?
That is, when you go through, you know, professional training, sometimes you're pushed to particular projects.
Oh, you certainly are.
Yes.
Yes. So I went to graduate school at the University of Texas. And I went because Douglas Parker was there, because Gareth Morgan was there. And Arrowsmith was there, although mm-hmm. he left the year I arrived. So it didn't work out too well. I got to meet him later. but there was a lot of Wissenschaft, of course. There mm-hmm. was, for instance, Carl Galinsky, who's, I think, still there. And I managed to get away with a dissertation, which was a translation, Aratus's Phenomena. I wrote an introduction and I wrote notes, but really it was like a penguin aratus is what I was shooting for, you know. And somehow they let me get away with it. But when I went up for my first job interview at the University of Kansas, my only job interview, I remember Galinsky took me aside and said, when you go up there, don't read any poetry. Just give them the straight Wissenschaft. I didn't. I went up and I read aratus and talked about it. And so somehow, I'm one of the few, I think, classicists who's been able to, you know, run the course strictly on the basis of literary translation. I've written exactly two articles, both on aspects of Greek astronomy.
Mm-hmm.
And people tell me that I've sort of opened some doors as far as that's concerned. Translation, perhaps because, you know, of what I've done, partially because of what I've done, is more highly respected.
Mm-hmm.
In academia, or at least in classics. And I don't really know if that's true, but I'd like to think so.
I certainly hope so.